There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
As soon as Fraunhofer discovered the spectral lines, he published everything he knew about them. And the reverberations of his momentous discovery echo still.
His spectral lines revealed that the visible cosmos is all made of the same elements. The planets. The stars. The galaxies. We ourselves and all of life. The same star stuff.
Well, there's a clip from Sunday's Cosmos, a Space-Time Odyssey. The current host of the new Cosmos, Neil deGrasse Tyson, echoing a bit of the old host of the Cosmos with the star stuff. Now, that seems to be the punchline that it's all driving toward. But is it actually self-evident from the fact that some scientist at some point was able to discover that the universe is all made out of the same elements? Is it a bit of a leap to say, and then we are, in the words of the old Cosmos, nothing but stardust, star stuff? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 8th of April. Dr. Danny Faulkner joins us for our review of Episode 5 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. A little bit later, Greg Kokel will join us. We'll talk about the story from last week, the resignation of Mozilla's CEO for his support of California's Prop 8 and the new kind of tolerance, if it can even be called that, of corporate America. That's Greg Kokel coming up in about half hour here on Issues Etc. You can join us for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at @IssuesETC. Joining us for a review of Episode 5 of Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, and his reaction to a recent St. Louis Post-Dispatch column on faith and science, Dr. Danny Faulkner. He holds a PhD in astronomy from Indiana University, and he's professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. Dr. Faulkner, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd.
They were in your wheelhouse on Sunday night with Cosmos as an astronomer. Issues of light and spectral lines and things like that. One of the things that Cosmos has been criticized for is the so-called historical science. That is, how are they dealing with the history of science and how are they telling the story? How did they do on Sunday night?
I think they did a little better, particularly in the more recent stuff. As near as I can tell, the stuff of Fraunhofer and Herschel and Newton was pretty much correct. I think some of the ancient stuff they did wasn't right. And this has been a kind of recurring theme. I really don't think the producers of the show are necessarily responsible for this. I think they've got some people who are researching and writing a lot of the scripts for them, and they're really a disservice in some of these things. The ancient Chinese stuff, they got some things wrong. They had book burning going on, and actually the first book burning that they claimed was about a century after the actual first book burning. I think they kind of confuse some of the issues. They're talking about all the banning of knowledge and stuff and getting rid of some of Confucius's writings. But in reality, they were concerned about the morals and ethics and philosophy. They didn't even touch the science there. So to claim that this was, you know, bottling up of scientific ideas is really doesn't square with the history at all.
Does that hint at a bit of an agenda on the producer's or the writer's part when it comes to Cosmos in general?
I would guess so. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking, but I think there's a certain narrative to be told there, and the fact that this is not just an isolated incident. Almost every episode so far, they've had some historical inaccuracies they're putting forth. Things just aren't true, and that's disturbing to me. Because, you know, where are the people checking this? When I write stuff, believe you me, it's checked through various people to make sure I get my facts right. And with the budget they have, I'm just surprised that so many inaccuracies are being told. And I think the average person watching this is just going to assume that it's all correct. And I've seen very little discussion out there of the historical inaccuracies. Everybody just oohs and ahs, what a wonderful show it is. And by the way, it is a good show. I'm enjoying it. I'm learning some things. But I'm just disturbed by this thing. And there's also this undercurrent again coming back and, you know, kind of taking swipes at creationists, I think. So I don't think the first Cosmos series did that. They kind of ignored us, but they keep coming back and kind of beating on us a little bit. I don't feel beat up. I just think it's interesting that they consider it are so significant that they have to take us on.
Well, I found this, and we've talked about it before, but I found this in my reading of the popularization of a lot of this science, that, look, I would really prefer to be ignored if they think my viewpoint on creation is so ridiculous it's not even warrant comment. How often they comment on it, how often they take stabs at creationism or intelligent design. What do you think that... What does that tell you about kind of the atmosphere in cosmology today?
Well, I think we're getting a more hostile sort of environment. I've seen that over my life. I'm 59 years old, and I'm seeing an increasing a bit of intolerance. I'm seeing an increasing bit of making war. You know, back 40 years ago, in science programs like this, and a lot of popular level magazines dealing with science, they didn't even touch these things. And increasingly, their people are more and more strident in their responses to creationists. You're right. If you know what we're saying is so empty and so vacant, why do they have to keep coming back, making and these are the ones in the most recent episode? They were oblique, but they were there, particularly early on in the show.
So they were talking about two things, maybe more: the nature of light, a great subject, a fascinating subject that really runs through a lot of the best science that's been done in the last 200 years.
Let me interject here and say that they did a pretty good job of handling, you know, some, again, Fraunhofer, Herschel, the things that they learned, how they did it. I mean, this is what we call operational science at its best. And as near as I can tell, they handled a lot of that history correct. So I don't want to be totally negative here. They had some lot of good stuff there dealing with nuts and bolts science, as you say, good science.
Can you explain what the dilemma is, or had been, well, really still is in a lot of ways, for scientists who observe something as ubiquitous as light? Explain to the average layperson what is so puzzling about light itself as science observes its behavior.
Oh, boy. You know, we know a lot about light. Even after what he talked about in the program the other night, we've learned more since then, because this story kind of ended 200 years ago. But we don't really know what light is in many respects. It seems to be a wave, a vibration. The best theory we have of that, it's a wave or vibration in electric and magnetic fields. That was kind of tied together in a theory in the late 1860s. But some experiment, and that, by the way, that theory was so good in the latter part of the 19th century, people thought we're on the verge of ultimate reality. But then there were several experiments in the late 19th century that suggested that not only did light have a wave nature, it also acted like a particle. And that had, by the way, before the wave nature of light had been established, the particle theory was a pretty well liked and sought. Many physics people thought that's what light was. It was a particle. If you have a wave, it's a periodic disturbance in some medium, something, you know, oscillating up and down and causing this disturbance to move forward in space. If it's a particle, then you don't need a wave. It's just this little package moving along. We call it a photon today. And 100 years ago, scientists, physicists were forced to kind of wed the two theories. It was a shotgun marriage. Nobody wanted to go there. Now everybody, including myself, we've been brought up in this environment where light has two natures, a wave and a particle. And we now find that matter, we tend to think of it like electrons and protons as being particles, but they have a wave nature too. And it kind of fuzzes things up. And so we've got this kind of a patchwork theory that we've put together, quantum mechanics and other theories to try to explain the nature of light and nature of matter today. And it's not really been tied together well. It's like I said, it's a patchwork. We've got, you know, certain theories that work in certain situations and certain theories that work in others, which tells me that I think our theories are incomplete. There's some other further theory out there that we've not thought of yet. But our ideas are incomplete and kind of herky-jerky at this point.
Well, just last night I was listening to an interview with the principal investigator and the theorist behind the BICEP-2, the telescope that was so much in the news a couple of weeks ago that had discovered these gravity waves in the cosmic background radiation or something like that related to the Big Bang. And I heard them distinctly say, both the theorist and the investigator, you know, we used to think of matter as particles, and now we just think of matter as, what did he say, excitements in fields.
Yep.
In various fields. Is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about. But yet at the same time, there are certain ways we have to talk about matters being particles. But excitements of fields is the other one. And the two have never really been successfully merged into a single whole. We've got, you know, approaches at it, but it's there's a lot left undone.
We're talking with Dr. Danny Faulkner, reviewing episode 5 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. A little bit later, we'll talk with him about a St. Louis Post-Dispatch column titled Faith and Science. He holds a PhD in astronomy from Indiana University and is professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis.
Hey, St. Louis, how would you like to achieve your fitness goals in a fun and supportive atmosphere? Hi, this is Kevin Reisick, owner and operator of Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois. We offer adult boot camps throughout the week. These camps include cardiovascular conditioning, muscular strength and endurance training, balance and coordination activities, and more. For more information, give me a call at 618-670-6952, Arch Fitness of East Alton, Illinois, 618-670-6952.
Carpet, hardwood, tile, stone, laminate, you name it, they've got it at Vallo Floor Coverings in Edwardsville. Vallo's offers competitive pricing, a knowledgeable sales staff to help you with product selection, and name brands like Shaw, Congoleum, Mohawk, Florida Tile, and more. Vallo Floor Coverings, 1009 Plummer Drive in Edwardsville, 618-656-7788, or vallofloor.com.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Are the New Testament Gospels reliable historical documents? How can a loving God allow evil in the world? You'll find answers to these questions in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April, Making the Case for Christianity, Responding to Modern Objections. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Making the Case for Christianity.
We are scholars. We are brothers. We are friends.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing episode 5 of the TV series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey. Dr. Danny Faulkner is our guest. Now, one of the things that they discussed last Sunday night on Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, and you hinted at it before, was in kind of literally breaking light into its elements, trying to figure out what light is, they discovered that the elements of the universe that are common here on Earth are also out there in the stars, in the planets. Talk a little bit about what they explained on the Sunday night.
Well, they kind of left the story hanging there. Fraunhofer noticed these dark lines running through the spectrum of the sun. He cataloged those. He named them. We still use his designations after 200 years. He hadn't a clue what they were. He thought at first that they were just breaks in the different colors or something. And he died a relatively young man. He may have figured it out, but it was after his lifetime that people did. There were various people that experiment. They began producing spectra in the lab that they could compare, and they found when they heated certain substances up, they gave sets of spectral lines. And a guy named Kirchhoff, about the middle part of the 19th century, began to tie this together very nicely, and it allowed for spectral analysis. And so gradually they began to realize that the lines they were seeing in the sun were due to various elements that they could identify here on the Earth. And it showed pretty convincingly then that at least the Earth and the sun were made of the same sorts of things. You find iron lines in the sun, for instance, and calcium lines and things like this. We did it for the stars. We find them in those as well. And so there's this commonality that, you know, the sun is, and the stars are made out of things similar to what we find here on the Earth, same kind of elements, different temperatures, different pressures and so forth, but the same sort of elements.
Now, this leads to the star stuff that was the original Cosmos's claim to fame. The one thing it kind of left behind, besides billions and billions of years, was the term star stuff. What's the logic used by cosmologists to say if we can see heavy elements like calcium and iron in the sun, then we must be made of the dust of exploded stars?
Yeah, this is where you swerve off. Well, we've talked about this point from operational science. Now you're swerving off into a historical science here. The understanding is that the universe began in a Big Bang. That's the dominant theory today. And that Big Bang only produced hydrogen and helium and a little bit of lithium. So where did the carbon in our bodies, where did the nitrogen in the air in our bodies, where did the iron in our blood, the calcium in our bones, where did all that stuff come from? And over the past 60 years or so, astronomers have developed a very detailed theory that stars go through cycles where they can get their energy by synthesizing heavier elements. You start with hydrogen, go to helium, you go from helium to carbon, you make a jump there, and then you work your way up through oxygen to iron and other heavier elements. And there's a very elaborate theory of how this has happened, and the idea is that the elements I just mentioned in our bodies was forged inside of these stars in the past billions and billions of years ago. Notice he slipped that in Sunday night. And that the stars blew up and seeded the space with these heavier elements, which then formed into stars and repeated the process. So that's where Carl Sagan 35 years ago said that we were made out of stardust. It's based upon a very peculiar evolutionary theory of where the elements came from and ultimately where we came from.
Do you kind of begin to see, I'm going to call it a house of cards, in which if they're wrong on something as basic as, say, the Big Bang, then they've got to explain the origins of these things in some other way, because it's all based upon the fact that the Big Bang only left behind the lightest of what we know today as the element.
Yeah, you know, back in the 40s and 50s, they had hoped that they could produce all the elements in the Big Bang. They thought iron and calcium and stuff. They were very disappointed in the early 1950s to discover they couldn't do it. So they began casting about, and certainly by the late 50s, they had decided that it must have been formed in the stars. And so that theory was developed quite robustly in the early 60s, and with more details worked out more recently. A lot of heavy physics involved. It's a very complicated, involved theory. But yeah, it's an attempt to explain the world around us entirely in naturalistic terms.
Now, the other thing that the back to the historical science, the examination of light eventually revealed that these lines were due to the fact that in the atoms themselves, electrons don't kind of just go willy-nilly around the nucleus. They in fact operate in what are called kind of quantum shells, an idea that will come back, I'm sure, in a future episode of Cosmos, a Space-Time Odyssey. What's the idea here?
Okay, this is where it gets into this quirky little world between the particle and the wave sort of idea. This idea developed about a century ago, certainly kind of gelled by about 90 years ago, with, again, details being worked out. But electrons we tend to think of being little particles that orbit around the nucleus of the atom. You can imagine the nucleus being a softball and the electrons being little BBs some considerable distance away orbiting around. But in reality, their understanding has been for a long time that the electrons are really little waves. If you saw a little diagram they show this little thing waving back and forth as it went around the atom, and then it would magically disappear from one orbit and go to another orbit. And that's pretty much the idea of what's going on. We used to say, or we still say this, that the electrons jump from one orbit to another. They really don't jump. They just disappear from one and reappear in another.
They don't pass through the intervening space, so to speak.
No, they don't even pass. They just reappear. It's almost like teleportation. And nobody really understands what's going on. That's the best understanding we have now. At one time, people naively thought, well, they jump. Well, no, they don't jump. They just disappear and reappear. It's kind of when you think about it, it's a very strange concept. And I think it harbors back what I said earlier. I think there's a lot about these things we don't understand. Our models today, if we ever do discover the correct model, we'll look back and laugh at how naive our models have been. And that should be humbling. I mean, we tend to think so many times. You talked about this thing from Bicep 2 with the gravity waves and the Big Bang inflationary model and all this sorts of stuff. People seem very sure of their models. But I love history, and I like to look back at the models people have had in the past, the theories, and that we've had in the past theories that people thought were absolutely unassailable. You know, might as well go home, this is a done deal, only to find a few years later that theory is out the window, replaced with something else. And I think we all need a little more humility here.
Well, I noticed this, and I mentioned before the interview that I had heard with the Bicep people last night, and the other thing that struck me about that interview, I'd like your thoughts on it, is, and I was surprised to hear, because I guess I hadn't noticed in the news coverage, that their findings have not yet been peer-reviewed. They said, oh, no, it's been reviewed by thousands of people on the Internet, but it hasn't yet been peer-reviewed or even published officially in a scientific journal, which I take is kind of important to the scientific community. And they said the rationale was, look, we just thought the findings were so earth-shaking, if true, they said, if true, that everybody needed to know about it. Is that good scientific protocol?
Not really. I mean, people are called out on that quite a bit. You know, this is science by press conference rather than science by peer review. Now, when you do a press conference and you make the paper or version of it available online, and I downloaded one the same day and I started reading through it, it's there to kind of be peer reviewed, but that's not the way it's normally done. I think they're trying to invite this peer review. But what they're trying to do there is be the first to have a claim made, because nearly everyone expects this to be Nobel Prize worthy at some point. And if you're the first person to find evidence of inflation, then that's really, really good. So there's, I think, quite an inducement there to prematurely announce this. And it would be quite rich if a few months down the road we end up having a retraction of this. You remember back to 25 years ago, there was a press conference announcing cold fusion, and that one fell apart. So this is not the way it's supposed to be done.
Now, the other thing I wanted you to react to was a column that appeared recently in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch here in this area of the country, talking about science and faith and how they can work together. What was your general reaction to what you found in that column?
Well, I think in general the author was using science as a stand-in for evolution. You start talking about science, but what you really are talking about is evolution. And that's sloppy, I think. There's much far, far more to science than that. In fact, I would call evolution non-science. I'm a scientist. I have 4 degrees in science. I taught science at a university for many years. I've published many papers in scientific literature. I think in any respect, someone can call me a scientist. I'm not an evolutionist. So to equate the two or argue that's what's really it's all about, I think is unfair. I think science is being used in an improper. The word science is being used in an improper way here to advance a certain agenda that she wants.
Here's a quote from the column. I could pick any paragraph, but this one should suffice. The columnist writes, for instance, Genesis doesn't contradict evolution because it's not even interested in or perhaps even aware of the same questions that science sets out to answer. It doesn't tell us how. It tells us why we are here. What does our existence mean? How do you respond to that?
Well, I think there's a false dilemma here. You know, it has to be, you know, how or why. Well, why can't it be how and why and when and who and all these sorts of questions? When you look at the Genesis, it's a book of beginnings, and it has many accounts, if you want to call them stories, accounts, what do you want to say? But it gives you a lot of detail of the how. So I'm quite amazed how anybody could be knowledgeable of the first few chapters of Genesis and say it doesn't address how. It certainly does. Now, I think what's really going on here is she doesn't like the how that she sees. She wants to salvage something from it, so her response is to claim that, well, the details don't matter. Well, she didn't say that, but I think that's what she's implying here, what her assumption is, because there are plenty of details on how God did this. And you know, whether she likes the way it's read to us or not is irrelevant. There is a how there.
She says that not all Christians, she says she's a Christian, are biblical literalists. Lots of us, she says, understand that the Bible wasn't written to answer the scientific questions of our day. That's kind of a yes and no, isn't it, Dr. Faulkner?
Yeah, I think it is. But look, it is a history book. The Bible, the vast majority of it is history, and we're talking history here. We're not talking about operational science, things you can test in the here and now. We're talking about past processes, and we have what amounts to an eyewitness testimony of what was here. And I think this is a false dichotomy she's bringing up.
Dr. Danny Faulkner holds a Ph.D. in astronomy from Indiana University, and he's professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. We'll post a link to Answers in Genesis at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Faulkner, thank you very much. Look forward to next week's conversation.
I will, too.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is a great apologetic text. It's brand new from Concordia Publishing House, and it's called Making the Case for Christianity, Responding to Modern Objections. It includes several Issues Etc. regular guests like Craig Parton, Dr. Adam Francisco, Angus Manoj, Corey Moss, and others. You can find out more about Making the Case for Christianity, the Book of the Month for April, at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House. Tell them thank you for producing a great apologetic text, and then order Making the Case for Christianity, Responding to Modern Objections. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. When we come back, we're going to revisit a story we've discussed several times here on Issues Etc. the last half hour of the program on this Tuesday afternoon. We're going to spend with Greg Kokel of Stand to Reason, author of the book Tactics Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions, about the resignation of Mozilla's very short-lived CEO because of his support for California's Prop 8 and natural marriage. We'll be right back. You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
Imagine SteadfastLutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm. So check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Redeemer Lutheran, Mandeville, Louisiana. Our Savior Lutheran, Whitefish Bay, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Emmanuel Lutheran, Louisville, Nebraska, Grace Lutheran, Warminster, Pennsylvania, Trinity Lutheran, Valonia, Indiana, Emmanuel Lutheran, Pensacola, Florida, St. Athanasius Lutheran, Vienna, Virginia, and Emmaus Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.